Hello and welcome to the BAM Deep Dives, a podcast series by the Belgian Association of Marketing. I'm Sarah from Imakina, an EPAM company, and I invite experts to come and have a chat about some very hot topics in marketing. In each episode, I make them dig deep so they give us practical insights and real-world case studies. Today, I'll be talking with Anthony Iglesias from Carrefour and Maarten de Neve from Imakina. What we'll be talking about? Hyper-personalization. I hope you're ready. Let's get started. Hello, Anthony. Hello, Maarten. Welcome.
Hello, Sarah.
Could you quickly introduce yourselves? And you can start, Anthony.
Thank you, Sarah. So my name is Anthony Iglesias. I'm working at Carrefour since 1 year and a half as a personalized customer marketing director. So what's in a name? Long story short, our span of responsibility cover the personalized direct-to-consumer marketing, so the direct relation with our customers, but also our loyalty program. So we try to offer the best loyalty program we can, and we animate it all year long.
Interesting. And you, Maarten?
Thank you, Sarah. So my name is Maarten de Neve. I'm digital marketing lead at Imakina. I've been guiding clients and consulting clients in direct marketing or personalized marketing, whatever name we give it, in the past 20 years. So I'm really passionate about one-on-one marketing and making sure that we create these experiences that create business and value for our clients.
Interesting. Well, I know that the two of you are here to talk about hyper-personalization. So, Anthony, can you start the conversation by giving us a definition of what hyper-personalization is?
Yeah, sure. So, to me, hyper-personalization is the level of personalization that is created when using a combination of advanced tools, concepts like AI, real-time, whatever you have in mind, and multiple type of data, socio-demo, basic, behavioral, profile, declared, observed, calculated. So when we combine everything together, then you get the closest to the hyper-personalization.
Maarten, do you agree?
Absolutely. I think it's a perfect intro to say that personalization or hyper-personalization is the advanced form of personalization, where in the past where we were doing personalization as well, but more in a project approach, not automated, using less sources of data. And these days we have a lot more data and technology at hand, so we can improve and go to that hyper, even if it's a buzzword, more a one-on-one adaptive way of using personalization. Yeah.
Is it really clear for everyone what the difference is between personalization and hyper-personalization?
Well, that's a good question. I think the main difference or the main uplift from personalization is it is automated, it is real time, it has all sources of data that you can use and it's implemented in the full customer journey. So not just in the marketing journey, but it's the full journey, including even sales processes, custom service processes. So it's the whole user experience that's been influenced by personalization.
So it's an ecosystem.
It's an ecosystem, and it's also a level of personalization. So you can have different level, not in a particular order, but segment-based, behavioral-based, predictive, location-based, whatever. And I think when you can use wisely all those different type of personalization, you can get to the hyper-personalization. Of course, I said wisely. Mm-hmm. If you go too far in it, you don't have to look creepy.
Yes. So what do you put in place to make sure that you don't become creepy as a company?
Well, at Carrefour, we send more or less 300 emails per year to our database. Not everybody received 300 emails, of course. We try to avoid spamming.
Let's hope not.
But we send 300 emails. So some become day-to-day job for us. In those ones, we don't need to go that much in-depth. Imagine you're walking in the street, you meet someone you don't know from anything, and he starts knowing everything about you. You would say it's a bit creepy, of course. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, you meet a friend you haven't seen in a long time, and that person starts asking you questions and starting interacting with you, then you get in a comfortable situation. That's what we try to find, the right level of personalization. So as I say, not every email has to go too far in the personalization. It's not an objective as such. But it's important to find the right level of it and, of course, plan it. The more you plan, the less effort you make for every interaction you have with your customer. And game is on.
I hear that hyper-personalization is not the end goal.
Indeed, that's one view, of course. on the one hand, it takes a lot of effort to go there. You cannot automate everything. And as I said, when you start the conversation with a new member of the program, even if you know more information than you should know, I think it's nice and wise to use the level of personalization that the customer feels comfortable with. Dear madam or sir, dear Mr. this or that, can be a good start to talk with.
I want to bounce on that because you said the level of personalization that people feel comfortable with. Yeah. But how do you identify that?
Experience, I would say.
Okay.
Try and test. And then you start, actually, I always try to put myself in the shoes of someone I meet, like the example I gave, in the street, in a bar, whatever. You don't start immediately with, I know you're 20 years old, you live there, and you start with, hello, my name is this or that, who are you? And you start into a conversation. And that's, I think, the secret of finding the right level.
It's not an end state to get the fullest out of that technology or out of that tactic. It's not a purpose to go the furthest possible in hyper-personalization. It's trying to make your user and your brand experience the best. So it's like the moment that you feel that it's no longer advertising, but that it's helping you and that it's relevant, then there's probably no problem in sending one communication more than yesterday. It's the moment that you feel that, okay, they're using these tactics to go all the way and it's beyond what I was expecting and they weren't really transparent in the data that they needed to do this. In that case, you feel like it's becoming creepy. So it's the same as in advertising. Advertising interests you. If it's interests you, then it's relevant. If it's not interesting and if it's really getting creepy, then you would say, okay, this is the border for me as a person. We cannot trespass that.
We've now talked about the negative, which is the creepy part. But when do you know that personalization is actually successful?
Well, for me, personalization is successful when you really feel the value that it brings. And it's not just, you have a brand experience, you have brands that need to make sure that the user experience is delightful. The moment that we can say, this is really now bringing me extra value, then personalization is good. Imagine that you work for a sports brand. The moment that you feel that the sports brand is really guiding me as a person and bringing me relevant information that helps me uplift my performance or my user journey, that moment it brings value and you feel, okay, this brand really knows me, understands me and communicates or reacts upon that. I think that's the goal, to really bring that relevant value.
And at Carrefour?
We are lucky to be in a business where we can measure a lot of things. And of course, most of our interaction with customers goes with a coupon. So it's easy to measure how successful a campaign will be. We know the costs, we know the habits of the customer, we know if it brought additional turnover or not. So I think that definitely couponing would be a good start to measure if personalization worked or not. And we can always compare with people that didn't receive that personalization and how the sales increased. Because of course, we don't always only do personalization, we also have other activities and sales increase in some situations, hopefully the most of the time. But we have tools to measure how good one specific action did.
How do you personalize coupons?
Personalized coupons is based mostly on the behavior, so on the product based, if you buy or not specific products, and sometimes also on the total basket. So we send a mailing every month, for instance, a direct mail, paper mail, where we send to that audience, we call that a total achat, a coupon based on your total basket, where we try to ask you to make one additional effort. Of course, we are very generous going with it. We try to create an habit of having bigger baskets. And on top, we also offer four different coupons that are more product-based. So if you buy a specific product, you will probably get the coupon that's to thank you to buy the product. So it's not always and only triggered to make you buy more. It's also to thank you to be a good customer.
Yeah. I think it's important indeed to thank you on what you did in the past and maybe see, okay, this is a product that interests this person. How can we make sure that this person can buy more or buy more with a promotion, but you also need to think about how can we inspire that person. Maybe that person would also be interested in a next best product that is really linked to the previous product. And secondly, thirdly, maybe there's also the possibility to predict when a person has a specific frequency in buying products. We can easily say, look, it might be that the next time that he buys is in that period. So we can do a suggestion there. And at that moment, you show that you're relevant as a brand, and you're showing that, okay, we understand you. There are specific needs you have that come back, but there is also inspiration that you're seeking for. We bring you the inspiration that you need in the communication that we send out.
And indeed, if I can add on that, I always take the example of airlines company. The more you fly, the more you get miles, the more you fly again, versus the telco company. The less your customer, the more they try to attract you with a lot of rewards. We try to be a bit in between. And of course, you can move the arrow a bit left or a bit right and also make a difference between customers. Not all customers are the same. Some deserve more rewards. Some get the opportunity to buy products they don't know because they buy at the competition. We don't want to make people buy and eat more than what they regularly eat. We try to get market shares from competitors as well. So we try to play with all those different aspects. So as I said, we have those regular mailings, emailings every month, every week. But we also have customer lifecycle program. So for instance, a welcome, anti-churn, birthday, just name it, where we try to adapt our message on one hand, because it's not only about couponing and on buying, it's also about communication. So we try to adapt our message, our call to action, like coupons, and the rewards all year long as well, because it's important to be consistent in what we offer to the customer.
I hear a lot of variety in the way you address the customer, right? So is that also part of hyper-personalization?
What do you exactly mean with variety?
Well, for example, we send you coupons based on your behavior, mm-hmm. the past purchases, but yeah. We also send you an email on your birthday, for example.
Could be, indeed. And I think that's what passionates me. That's why I'm passionate about hyper-personalization, because in the end, it's a real interaction with every single customer. I don't think that two customers, if you compare what one customer receives and what another customer receives on a yearly basis, I don't think we have two customers that receive the same set of information, of communication type, of rewards. Everything is different, and we try to adapt ourselves to every different customer. And
it's not only another person, it's also contextual. So a person can also change. It can be the same person, but in another context. And maybe interacting with other channels then and other moments. So you need to think about how is this person, in what situation is he in? How can we be relevant in that context? So it's even within one person that you need to change your approach often. Yeah.
But this kind of personalization really hinges on the data you have.
Absolutely. That's key. I think if you, that's the main thing you need to think about. If you have a data foundation, at least something to start with, then you can go and approach personalization. And from that data foundation, you can then further build on and nurture every data point that you might need in the future. But that's what we often see with clients. So there is a foundation that is already there, but it's maybe a bit siloed. It's scattered over different teams. People have different understandings of the data points. So that's mostly what is needed at first to make sure how can we approach data in a unified way and then start from there on. You don't need to wait until you have that Rolls Royce of data. You can start already with what you have today.
Yeah, totally. When you said different understanding of data, I remember when I started at Carrefour, I discussed with my colleagues, and every person I talked to, I asked, who is the customer of Carrefour? I think I talked to 10 persons and I got 10 different definitions. You talk to e-commerce, you talk to branding, you talk to anyone, to the stores. We have three type of stores: hypermarkets, supermarkets, and proximity stores. You talk to anyone, you have a different understanding of who our customers are. But in the end, it's the same person with different shopping missions, a different moment in life. Some have children, some are getting children, some are past that period. So it's really complex, detailed, but at the same time, very interesting. And I love it.
Yeah, I think that's And it's not so uncommon that teams within a company don't have the same definition of a profile. And that's mostly what we as an external company try to do, is to make sure that we have one unified definition. Because we've seen even the most mature companies who do really advanced personalization or marketing automation, whatever you name it, that different teams had different approaches. For example, there was a web personalization team and then an email. So they were split into siloed channels. And then you say, okay, these people don't interact with each other. How can we make sure that there is one team, one approach, and one definition of data? And that's, I think, really key for even mostly the bigger companies to make sure that they get the most out of personalization.
And then the logical question, me as a listener, my logical question is, if you face this challenge that the data is everywhere or people don't have the same definition of data, how do you then bring all of this together?
Well, what we mostly do, it's not, of course, easily said because we have an outside view. The people inside the teams, they have specific team goals, etc. From an outside point of view, what we try to do is create some kind of agents, people who are responsible for data points. And so together with them, we make sure that there is a unified understanding of data. You create a view on the data architecture. You create a view on the data fields through a data dictionary. And then you implement use cases together. And just one simple use case to start from with the delivery in the next month. And that's the way we set our first steps into having a unified view on data, unified success. And from there on, they can easily build further on. That's how we approach it. I don't know if that's similar at Carrefour.
Yeah, totally. Before I arrived, I think it was 3-4 years ago, the decision was taken, because indeed there was data a bit everywhere. The decision was taken to have a common data set with common definition. The investment was done to have everything cloud-based, accessible to some people that would need different type of data. We invested also in data governance to have one clear definition. So we have a team of people that work all day long, all week long, to just make sure that definitions are the same, reporting are consistent. It's not always easy because anything can be looked from different perspectives, and it's natural. We just try to be the closest to each other, or at least have an explanation why we look differently at the same data. The challenge for me is, in a company such as Carrefour with such huge data sets, where a project is not a small project that is done in a couple of days, trying to follow the technology that goes faster and faster. So there, I think, there is a challenge for every big company and every big database that needs to evolve continually.
What is the biggest challenge internally to get people to unite?
I would say first is already get rid of the silos. Everybody has its own objectives, and all the different objectives answer to the same company objective, but still everybody wants to go fast, wants to be the best in what he does, and doesn't always take a step back to look at the impact of what everyone action has. So I think that would be the first step to not only align on the objective, but align on the how. And the how is very often forgotten, I think. And then I would say, trust the process. So there are people that are there to make sure that the definitions are the same and are shared. Studies were made to make sure that we all agreed on those rules. We have to agree that we don't change rules every 2 days. And sticking to the rules is sometimes important. Of course, we keep in mind that agility is very important because the world evolves, the customer evolves, the business evolves. And it's all about balance. Again, finding the right balance between what we can do, what we can change, versus what was decided to stay there for longer.
And I think for that reason, it's important to you need to have a long-term vision, of course, a roadmap, but it's really important to have a short-term approach to it. And that's what we do. So each team, it's natural. Each one has his own objective. You do paid media, you do owned media, you have campaign people who work on one specific campaign. What we try to do is make sure that you have use cases that integrate all of these and that they understand each other's objectives. If you have ROAS to achieve and you have customer lifetime value to achieve, how can we bring those together into one use case and build from there on in multi-expert agile teams?
Well, so far we've covered the definition of hyper-personalization, and then we started talking about the foundations, and we've now talked about data. But Anthony, you already mentioned it. Another aspect to hyper-personalization is the tech.
Yes, indeed. So the tech, that goes a little bit beyond my direct scope, in the sense that in a company such as Carrefour, we need to cut a bit more. Still, I have a seat at the table and we discuss tech together. I think that's where every company is looking now, or should look in the coming, in the near future, is AI, of course. I don't think that that many companies are there yet. We aren't there yet. We still look into how to use it, how to use it wisely, and what different type of projects we can use it for. As you said, use cases. So we're a bit in that situation right now, where we look how to use it in the best possible way.
And I think most companies are in that situation. I think, but the thing is, you see a lot of seminars of big technology players, and they have like hyper-personalization that comes from there, and they have this nice new technology that can do everything, and it's really promising. But the thing is that when you go back to the reality, it's often you need to work with your own current tech stack and build use cases from there on, and from there see where does the business value come from in the future, and do we need to adapt our tech stack? And if yes, how can we then build up to that, build use cases that that convince people to change the more tech stack? Because it's often not needed for each company at the level of maturity that they're in to change the more tech stack. It's always a belief that we need to do that first and then get value out of it. I think you can surely get value out of your tech stack today. It might not be hyper yet, personalization, but you can really build good value use cases already today.
You've talked about the levels of maturity in personalization. I'm wondering how, if I had a company, how would I know what level I'm at? What are the levels and how do I know where I am?
It's of course important to align with other people in the sector. So therefore, I think things like these podcasts are perfect. And you often also see different types of testing methodologies. I mean, all the tech companies have these maturity tests, or some agencies have these maturity tests. You can do those. But what I mostly think is, don't look at what is what the tech vendors are promising you that will be there tomorrow. You need to look at your own stage of maturity and see how can I make the business value come out of that tomorrow. I think that's the most important thing, because if you look at the long term, you will not you will be mainly visionary, and you need to act today. I think that's really key, regardless of the maturity state that you're in. But I presume that every company has a bit of a view on where they are and aligns with stakeholders or aligns with agencies to know what the next step would be.
And again, it has to make sense. Not every business needs the same level of maturity. So in the end, where you are at versus what? So I think that the most important is that you feel comfortable as a company to enter a discussion with your customer in the channel that you prefer, or in the channels that you prefer, of course. But I don't see the level of maturity as a thing on its own. It's a capability that you need to be able to communicate with your customers and see that you have a positive return in the end.
Makes sense. We've sort of skirted past it, but I would like to circle back to AI. Martin, AI, your thoughts?
Yes. Well, I think a lot of companies were already using things like machine learning in the past, or doing manual database work to make sure that they have the good segments of the sleeping clients, of the most promising clients, of the loyal clients. We had machine learning to do clustering, for example, so that already existed. Now, AI is given a promise that is much, that's all automated and in real time, and it's fantastic. And it is. But I do think that we were already doing it, and we shouldn't do it because of the technology's sake. It's not because of the fact that AI arrived that we should all be AI-driven tomorrow. Yes, the future is there. But I do think that we need to look at the business use cases and make sure that see what we need tomorrow and see if the technology can allow us today to build it, knowing that AI exists And if you need to do clustering or any other next best prediction, we can go there if it brings value. On top of that, a lot of the platforms already have AI-driven out-of-the-box tools that are available. Think of really, really simple tools like an email platform would have a subject line prediction or the send time optimization. These are also AI-driven and already really accessible for a few years now.
And at Carrefour, do they chase AI?
Well, first, I think you have to keep in mind that a tool remains a tool. A fool with a tool remains a fool. And if I give you the keys of my AI car, you will probably not drive faster than a pilot trained since years. This being said, I think that at Carrefour, we are lucky to be part of a huge group, and we would be silly to not use that power we have. I think, as you say, AI is such a big thing arriving. It's quite new. We have people that that are at a level that they can use to be able to negotiate things, take their time to think about how to use it. Of course, we want to have a seat at that table, to have our say, so we don't just let the group decide for us. We try to propose use cases, to influence, to tell them how much we could do with it also. But I think it would be a pity to not use the force of the group Carrefour for that.
Absolutely. And I see a very, very strong future in the agents models. So the AI agents will be there for us tomorrow to help us make our work, make us do our work better. And also to help clients. I think if we think about how can we use AI not only for efficiency, that's what we mostly are in doing today. How can we be more efficient? We should use this technology also to bring more quality. And then think about the last step. How can we use this new technology to build business models that really help clients? How can we build agents, for example, that help our clients to be to have a better customer or user experience? How can an agent help him? Going back to the sports brand, how can an agent help me to personalize my relationship with a brand and advise me on my next best step? How can an agent help me in being the best cook and finding the best matching recipes with the context I am in today? These are the things that I think we should look on a long term.
You said agent, but for those of us who don't know what an agent is?
Agents are AI-driven technology that allow you to do real-time and automated services for you. And think of an agent. An agent can be also a multi-combination of multi-agents. Imagine that I want to translate my data into clusters. You can do that by an agent. Imagine that I want these clusters to be translated into persona. That can be done by an agent. Imagine that I want to contact each persona in a personalized way on the relevant channel. That can be done by agents. So the combination of multiple agents will allow you to create an agent-driven user experience, I'm talking about the future, but helping you to bring really contextual and relevant for user at the right moment, bringing the right message. And I think we should all think about what part of my job can tomorrow be done through agents, and how can we facilitate that? How can we do that in an automated and real-time way to make sure that our job becomes more efficient and the user journey can then be more relevant?
Okay. I'm trying to picture it a little bit, right? This agent. So this agent is kind of a one touch point for you to then speak to other AIs or generative AIs or that sort of thing. So they instead of speaking to a different AI for each thing, you combine them all through an agent. So I speak to one AI and then that does several things for me. So first look at the data, then see the trends in the data and then synthesize to persona and then use those insights to give me content suggestions, for example. Rather than having to do these four actions separately, I speak to one agent who then prompts the other agents or the other AIs to do that for me.
Yeah. Yeah, the agent that you have in mind is indeed a person that, or a technology that you talk to, that guides you. What I meant with agents is everything behind that makes sure that all the automated and real-time decision-making is done. You can split that up into different agents. And then indeed, in the end, you can have then like an avatar or a personalized, a person that represents your company to translate that into servicing you. But I do think it's not about thinking about the channels that you're mostly on today on which you communicate to a client. So it's like the classic advertising approach. we need to think about how can we make content in the future delivered by these agents in a contextual way, on the right moment for a user when he needs that information. How can we bring that content to that person at the right time?
Interesting. We are not there yet. I'm learning. I think that if I take a step back on more macro level, my gut feeling says that in a first stage, I would use AI to get rid of repetitive work, I don't know, product description, those type of things, to free up time to people to make, to have more added value projects. Of course, if we look further, I'm sure and it will evolve by then, we would be able to get rid of complexity. And then I think that the third stage would be to go there. But I think we still have a lot of work to do and a lot to learn. It's a completely different approach and dimension. So I'm thrilled.
It's an exciting future indeed.
Indeed.
I want to come back to something you said earlier, Anthony. You said the power that we have when we do hyper-personalization. And as we all know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
So how do we hyper-personalize ethically?
That's a subject we have every day on the table at Carrefour. In case of doubt, we overkill. So we don't take any risk. We see some other actors on the market, competitors or not, taking a lot of risks, and we chose not to go there. So our customers can continue to provide our data safely. We'll not misused. Still, the temptation is big to push the boundaries. But yeah, I think every time we launch a communication, we try to put ourselves in the shoes of the customers. We try to use the data wisely, to not go too far in the personalization, to not use data, in an unethical way, like alcohol promotions to anyone. Also baby, female hygiene. So there are some products that where we are even more cautious than for the rest of the data we try to promote, the coupons we try to promote. But it's a daily fight with DPO to use the right level of ethics and of legal compliance.
I was wondering, and do you then have specific people who are dedicated to keeping an eye on that, on ethical matters?
Well, when we need help, we can always go to legal, to DPO. For daily matters, it's more on team level where we discuss. We have some experience as well. And I don't think one campaign goes off with only two eyes looking at it. So we try to help each other.
Yeah, well, we see the same. So what we try to do is then create some kind of a RACI model where each one has a responsibility or a task within a project team. And one of those is then really the person that represents ethics. So you need to make sure that you always have one person who's dedicated to that. For each use case, he or she needs to check the box and say, yes, I did a validation for ethical matters. Because indeed, the risks are too high these days. We have more data. We have a lot of data. So we should really always keep an eye on. And I'm happy to hear that you guys are doing that.
I agree. As a customer, I'm very happy to hear that. I want to move to a little bit further into the future now, because we talked, hyper-personalization is coming. We need data, we need tech, and we need, an ethical approach to combine all of those to create value for the end user. If we step a little bit further into the future, what are the crazy things that we think we could do with hyper-personalization? When we dream for our businesses or our clients?
I think you can dream very far. Right? It's like what I just discussed earlier on. Mostly we recommend brands to start with use cases tomorrow, but you need to dream about the long term as well. And I do think a lot of the top brands, which you always refer to, you have the Netflixes and the Spotifys, etc. They do a lot of personalization. They have all the algorithms running to make sure that they have the right recommendation for you. I do think that this can all go a bit further, because for now, this remains rather channel-based, and they give recommendations. And there are two things that I miss there, and that's one, context. And secondly, and I think you will like this, is the serendipity. I really think that a specific context requires for me another recommendation. Even if I'll always listen to genre X, a specific context would allow me to get another genre because I'm not in the mood of that what I'm always listening to. That would be for Spotify. And secondly, we need to think about how can we make sure that we stay inspiring. And that's a really a risk what I always see is that when you do recommendations, the risk that you're going to a bubble, a filter bubble, which doesn't allow you to really be inspired and go outside and discover new things. Those, I think if we look at the future, I really would like to have a future where we have contextual moments together with brands where we get inspired. And it's not only recommending me the next best thing to buy, but also really inspiring me. And for me, that's the value that brands can bring.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we allow ourselves to dream, imagine that you sit in your couch, you wear glasses, and you enter a shop personalized. So it's not even personalized communication as we do today. It's your complete customer experience that is personalized. You see arrows that you follow to get to your product, to your shopping list, but also to the product that you might have forgotten because we detected that you wanted to do that recipe and you missed it on your list. We put some promotion forward. And actually, we don't talk anymore about hyper-personalization in terms of communication as we do today, but we mix the entire customer experience. I think that would be a level that I would love to see one day, but let's see what the years bring us.
Omnimodal experiences. I'm all for it. All right. A teeny tiny step back now, because we dreamed very far. If companies have their data in order, they've organized the data, they've got a definition that is unified, they've gotten rid of their silos, and they have the right tech in place, what else do they need in order to move forward towards a higher maturity level?
I like the point of what you said about maturity level. So not everybody wants to go to the end. So, and I totally I'm convinced of that. I think what is mostly lacking is like the team approach. So the unified team approach. You talked about data and technology, but it's also about making sure that we have the, I'm going to say it, the maturity in the teams. And that's more on how do we collaborate together to make sure that we not only look at our own expertise and our own channels and our own responsibility, but think in a unified way about the user experience. If you're saying indeed, I go to the shop and I want to have the personalized experience there, the same as I had on my app or on my website, I think that's the ultimate thing that we should go for. On any environment, any place that you visit or that you frequent the brand, all teams should collaborate. And I'm not thinking only about the marketing channels or the store, but it's also about the sales in B2B, also about customer service. In an ideal way, you have a unified view on data and a collaborative approach that each touch point uplifts the experience.
A collaboration model. Collaboration. And also a specific set of skills.
And skills, I do think that everybody should have like some kind of an agent or an evangelist. Not only for ethics, but also for the personalization knowledge to make sure that it's all over the company and not just in one department. And that's what we mostly see today. Personalization experts are there in one department, but they are not mingled into all of the other touch points a user frequents.
A seat at the table.
Yeah, indeed. And to come back on your question, I think that's... So you said when the data is in order, you have the people, you have the tools and everything, what else do you need? And I think you need something that actually you need upfront is a vision on how to use that. Because it's only when you know why you do things and how you're going to use it that you can have your tools in order and your data in order and everything cleaned. In data, we say always, sorry for the vocabulary, but shit in, shit out. So having not only a lot of data, but the right data, the priorities between what's calculated, what's declared, what's any type of data, and then knowing how you want to use it is the most important for me, I think. Everything starts with the why, with the vision.
And so what is the why of hyper-personalization? Or just personalization, because like you said, Marta, not everybody needs it. So personalization, what's the why?
Again, it has to bring value to the customer. If it brings value to the customer, it will bring value to Carrefour in this case. A happy customer, a customer that finds the product that he needs, will come back, will spend more, at Carrefour instead of the competitors. So it's really finding what will make it worth for the customer to come back in our stores. Because in the end, we are in a business where frequency, the size of baskets are important. So it goes back to very basic things where we have the chance to every week make the customer come back or lose him as well. And I think that having that vision on allowing us to dream on longer term, but acting on very, very short term. I said every week, but some customer pass every day, every 2 days. So that's also an important aspect of looking far, acting very fast.
Looking far and acting now.
Yeah, indeed.
And I think that's really key because personalization is often seen as a tactic. It's the same as performance marketing. They see it as a short-term value, but it's not. And actually, it should be something that uplifts your brand value and that you, so you can create real customer lifetime value, have a long-term vision, a long-term value for your brand. If you have a good user experience, it uplifts your brand equity. It's not only just a tactic to make sure that you have the next best buy done.
Mm-hmm. And yet we often look at a campaign we did. We look at how it performed, but that is really too short-termistic, I would say, because we analyze one communication set. We send over 150 million communication every year. I think that we should look at the relation we built with the customer, rather the sentence, the email, the whatever we sent. And that's why I'm coming back on the level of personalization. It's okay to sometimes being very basic to pass a message and sometimes being very, very close to the customer with a high personalization, right?
It all comes back to value and empathy.
Yes, it's the same as in advertising for me. Yeah? Advertising is interesting when it brings value, the same with personalization. You can see it as a tactic or you can see it to really bring value for a customer.
Wise words. Final question. Any tips for people who are listening? Anyone who wants to take a better look at the personalization they're doing or who wants to uplift it? What should they know?
I think you can start personalization tomorrow. Everybody can start doing better personalization tomorrow. The thing is, don't be afraid of the big Rolls Royces you need to implement. It's not the case. You can start by doing simple use cases and you can really have an impact on long-term value when you start tomorrow. And even if that's only building 4 use cases in a year, if you don't have the capacity, if you don't have the team, just start. I think that's the main key value. And always check on a quarterly basis, what did I do? Did we do well? Should we change our approach? And do we have a long-term vision that we are building up to? That you're not only campaign-focused, but really long-term brand building and data foundation building on the long term.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think make a first step. Talk to people. The conversation will start automatically. Interact on what people answer. Don't look only at what you're going to say. Listen to the feedback. Feedback is an email that is opened. Call to action that is used, a coupon that comes back. And I think that every little action will make it at the end of the year.
Well, it sounds like personalization is within reach for everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Anthony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sarah.